Is it just me, or do I work with a team of robots? I mean, I get it, work is work, but come on. You spent 8 hours a day with someone, you'd figured you knew something about them. Some days I feel like I'm going crazy. I've worked with these people for years, and I can barely tell you anything about most of my coworkers besides maybe their names and maybe what they had for lunch today. And don't even get me started on my boss. It's very clear he sees us as just his employees when we all know we're so much more than that. Is this normal?
Hi, I'm Dr. Steven Stein, clinical psychologist, emotional intelligence expert, and founder of MHS, a leading publisher of scientific, psychological assessments, and talent development solutions. I'm here to tell you, you should feel connected with your coworkers. So let's learn how you can improve your employees' experience, both on and offline. Employee experience matters. A study done by IBM showed that companies ranking in the top 25% of employee satisfaction made double in sales than those ranking in the bottom quarter. Why? Because happy people do better work. And as a leader, it's your job to help build that environment and foster community within your office. And no, another pizza lunch won't cut it. So what's the secret that will make your office thrive? Well, it's simple. You just have to listen. We all have lives outside of work, and we shouldn't be afraid to bring that into the office. Instead, we should learn how to embrace everything our staff brings to the table. And in order to do that, we need to tap into our emotional intelligence. Be curious. Show your team that you're interested in their success and you actually care about how they feel at work. Heather Younger is a speaker, consultant, and author who is an expert at helping businesses improve their workplace culture. She and I got to talk about the skills that will also help your leadership. Hi, Heather. Welcome to our podcast. Why don't we start off by having you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got interested in helping businesses improve their employee satisfaction.
I have a law degree, so I am a licensed attorney. I just don't practice anymore. And I took kind of a long journey through sales, large account management, customer experience. And then I was in this organization that was merging five companies together. And what I didn't really anticipate was how much the culture was going to go downhill through the merger and how little the leaders listened to both the customers and employees through the process. It started to get people nervous and mistrust and fear really set in. And I was feeling really kind of dragged down myself, to be honest. So I went to the head of HR and I was like, listen, we got to do something about our engagement, our mistrust. It's really bad. And she said, you're right. You should go do something about that. I was like, wait, what? Me? I'm leading customer experience. I'm not in HR or any kind of organizational development role. Like, why should it be me? But I was already the person who took a lot of time to uplift people, whether they reported to me or not. You know, really just was the person who always paid attention to those subtle cues happening inside the culture. So I took her up on the suggestion and I created an employee engagement council. And it brought people around the table from the different companies who already kind of expressed this desire to do something different because they were kind of in the muck too, like I was. It started to work. We did things like team member scavenger hunts and doing things that would like break down the silos, create more connection. We started to see some changes in how people were feeling. But then the merger didn't go so well and they had a layoff. And I was in that first 200 people of layoff. And so while it was a really tough spot to be in, being the breadwinner of a family of six at the time, it was very stressful. I realized in the moment that organizations have, there's that gap that exists when, especially when they're going through a major change, reorgs, mergers, just any kind of big change, they aren't always first to lean in, to listen, to seek the input to both customers and employees. In fact, they kind of operate in silos. And I realized I needed to be that person, at least in my small little world in the corner of the place I live and work, right? And just decided to launch into that space of helping organizational leaders understand what their customers and employees need and why, and giving those people a voice so they can kind of feel more empowered to be a part of the process.
Wow. It sounds like you sort of naturally fell into this whole area, this whole position.
I did. I absolutely did. Yeah. And it goes back way back to my story of being My mom is white and Jewish. My dad is Black and Christian. And being kind of an outsider, being someone who didn't have a voice, someone who, you know, often didn't feel like everybody cared for me in the way that I wanted. And it created in me that sense that I needed to advocate for other people who didn't have a voice, that I needed to make sure that people knew I saw them, that they felt uplifted, and just try to help leaders then do the same for their people. It just became a natural calling for me.
Today's topic is all about how we can improve the employee experience in the workplace, which is one of the main topics you focus on as a consultant. I'm really interested in your view on this, as we focused on intangibles like respect, autonomy, and of course, emotional intelligence. From your experience, what are some of the biggest challenges workplaces face when it comes to keeping their employees both engaged and satisfied?
I think they're not focused on the right things. They're focused on the outcomes first and not tying the hearts of the people, whether they be customers or employees, to the mission, vision, values, the work to be done in the organization. If they focus more of their effort on the front end, the outcomes will be there. So engagement will increase when they focus on tying the hearts and the minds of those who drive the business forward to all the things I just mentioned.
Taking a people-first approach to work is so important. And in order to do this effectively, you really have to start with yourself and be prepared to invest both time and energy into learning about your office. Being emotionally intelligent means really understanding your own feelings and where you're coming from, as well as being able to sort of read the feelings of other people or those around you. You may be leading the charge in terms of engaging with your employees, but they need to be a part of the process, especially when defining what culture means to your organization. This means creating a dialogue and paying attention to how your staff engages with their work, which is something Heather can share more on. It sounds like the direction you went is this whole area of active listening, which is of interest to us because, you know, we work in the area of emotional intelligence and that's kind of seen as a part of that. But you came at this quite differently in terms of how you became in this direction. So tell us a bit about how you use active listening and what it means for you.
My body of work is on caring leadership, and there are 9 behaviors in caring leadership, and one of them is active listening. And active listening is like the number 2 most important part of caring leadership. The number 1 is self-leadership. If we go back to that story of what I talked about in that merger, often we don't listen because obviously there's distractions there, we're multitasking, but we also are not listening because we're not really prepared to decide what we're going to do about what we find out. So often in the organizational context, they're like, we're not going to involve more people. We're going to keep it with the 6 of us when we make this decision because we know what we can control, what that response is going to be. There's going to be too many cooks in the kitchen. So how are we going to respond to all of that in a way that gets us through this process in a timely manner? And I say that active listening is different from that because if we go forward on a big project, on a merger or reorg, or whatever, and we have all these assumptions embedded in it, the outcome is not going to be fruitful anyway. You're going to have way less buy-in into the process. So that listening helps to gain or garner more buy-in, helps to create more of a sense of power and empowerment in those who are responsible to drive the changes forward in the merger or the changes that are happening anyway. So you might as well lean into it and just say, build that into the plan, into the change plan. How much time do we have to kind of seek feedback, to process what we're going to do, communicate back to them what we're planning, like how much time do we embed that into the process? That's how I look at active listening from a cultural perspective. When we look at it from a one-on-one perspective, it is all about relationship building. We can't have a team member, a customer, a partner, a vendor, anybody expect them to do something for us if we aren't taking that time to be present with them. And that presence could be like listening to uncomfortable truths and saying, how are we going to process those truths? And are we going to do something about those truths? Then following back up in that way, kind of closing the loop on the truths that we find out. Yeah, emotional intelligence is a bedrock. It's embedded in caring leadership. It's a kind of another way to call it servant leadership. In the end, it boils down to emotional intelligence.
So it sounds like your key to employee engagement is really getting them involved and being part of the process and listening and paying attention to them. A number of the companies we see today think that the way to engage people is by having pizza parties and going bowling together or whatever, all these sort of perks. Almost become a joke that when when that starts happening, you start worrying about what's going on in your organization. What do you say to leaders who use those kinds of perks and think that's the way to engage employees?
Those are very surface. We have to go super deep here. We are humans that are very complex. We are not therapists, but we almost have to lean in as if we are therapists, or as we are counselors. So we have to be comfortable dealing with just a lot of discomfort, because there's a lot of pain in the world. And we have to be willing to go deep. And when we show up with in that way with people, if they know that we're there for them in their muck, they're going to be willing to help us to the place we want to go with our outcomes as well. So I do think that perks are great if you've already done the basics. Then the basics are, of course, listening, empowering, involving, and making sure their voice are heard, make sure that safety is in place so that people can speak up, speak their truth, speak counter to what the norm might be. You know, feel uplifted, feel valued, all those things that are, again, just super foundational. And then go, would you all like to go to bowling? We just completed Employee Fanatics, my consulting, where we just completed a study, and it was focusing on kind of looking at hybrid, looking at remote, and looking at the experience that was there. And one of the pieces of feedback is that those who are hybrid remote do actually like to have like the team meetings or some of the outings, because they do still want and desire the connection. So some of those connection points actually have become a little bit more important. But like the pool tables and the things you're talking about now, it's like, it's so topical. You got to go deep before you go surface.
In addition to that, what we find is, people are different. People that you're dealing with and trying to connect with. Sometimes we look at personality. We find some people are more feeling oriented. They want to sort of feel comfortable with you before they'll open up. And other people are very rational and logical. And, you know, you're a lawyer. I'm sure you have a background in that kind of environment. How do you deal with these different personality types when you're trying to listen?
Well, it's interesting. So I am certified as a DISC facilitator. A DISC is that DISC, or the communication behavioral style assessment and trainings and things that we do. And I learned early on that there are different behavioral and communication styles and preferences. And I think that everybody should do that early work. They should understand what the preferences are, that there are differences, as you alluded to, different people, the logical, the emotional, things like that. And once you understand that person's preference, then the way you communicate verbally and the way that you listen are going to be real similar. What I mean by that is, for example, if there's someone who's a very process-driven, methodical, has to think things through, needs a spreadsheet, needs data, then your listening with them will almost be real similar. Whatever the thing is that's their North Star, you go to their North Star for their hub of information, data, input, output. You use their language and then you give it back to them that way. I understand that I can't meet the needs of employees if the internal people don't understand the needs, and I have to help them understand the needs by giving them the data more often than not. Sometimes there's some leaders at that level that like storytelling, and so I'll share with them a specific story related to their organization to get it across to them. But I'm not going to go into so much of my gut or how I'm feeling with people like that. So that would be the same thing on the listening side.
Yeah, it seems like having common language is important, having a common way of approaching it. We often use a tool called the Pearman personality indicator to help sort of break those differences and help approach people and know what the best way to do it. What do you advise someone who's new at a leader? Maybe they've been doing a certain job. They've been doing frontline work for a long time. They get promoted. How would you recommend a new leader get involved in listening and working with the team?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, some of the work that we do and we're doing now, we have a new Art of Active Listening facilitator program, or we're teaching people that the 5-part framework for active listening that I developed, doing like workshops and things like that. You know, there are books out there. I have a book, but there are other books out there about listening. And just, I think no matter what, we have to be constant learners. We have to have a desire and a knowledge to know, like, I'm not done. This is a journey of continuous improvement, but I'm never going to arrive. If we kind of continue to have that growth mindset and we continue to do that, not to think that we are stuck or we're done or we've reached a certain place, I think that's the best place for any newer or middle level manager to be, is to say, how can I learn more? What are the trainings? What are the certifications? What are the assessments? What are the books? What are the TED Talks, right? To continue to lean into learning.
So learning seems to be an important aspect. And I guess we never stop learning, right? We keep learning as we go. When we put in interventions like this, we often find that sometimes they don't succeed through the organization because we don't have buy-in from the top, the leadership. What do you do to sell leadership on your approach to tell them why this is important?
I always say, like, we have to know what their scorecard is. What is their measure of success? What is the thing they're tracking for either their board, for whatever their investors? We have to know what they're tracking for. And then we speak to that scorecard. So anything that we're looking to get done, if it doesn't connect to that scorecard, it's probably not going to have a lot of buy-in from the senior leadership team. So finding out what that is through whatever source you can. If it's a publicly traded, you can look at their corporate documents. If you report to two or three levels down, can you ask up? Or do you have access to the senior leadership team? Do you have access to any of the meetings where you can be a fly on the wall? Can you be a part of a project team that allows you to really get to that? Because once you get to that and understand what they're tracking for success, now everything that you do, how does that tie to the scorecard? Is it going to get them lower turnover? Are there issues related to something with the market, whether sales? Okay, is the thing going to help them with sales? Is the process going to improve something or reduce an error? That's based upon their scorecard. As you're kind of backing up, we think of DISC or any other assessments that you have. We understand the people's communication style. We understand what motivates them and what like inspires them through language or through charts or whatever. And once we get there, now we say, what are the things that they look at are success measurements for them? What are the things that they're tracking into the year in or the last next 2 to 3 years? And how can the thing that I want to get changed tie to that? And that's like all your business. If you do that, you can be successful.
So we've talked a lot about leadership and challenges and how you get the interest or the ear of senior leaders. One of the things I hear a lot about from leaders these days is, how do we deal with remote workers? Like, how do we connect with them? How do we get them engaged? I don't know what the heck's going on with them all day long now. Myself, I used to manage by walking around and talking to everybody. Now, I walk around an empty building talking to myself. So tell me, what do you do to help engage remote workers?
I have a fully remote team, which means I rely on them heavily. And I think as one of the things we have to get comfortable with is being okay with not knowing what they're doing every minute. That's one thing. And saying to ourselves, what is the end goal? What are the measurables? What are the things that I think of would make our team successful, our organization successful, and then them individually successful if they achieve XYZ? So once I know it, they know it, and they go about doing it, I need not to be super concerned about every minute that they're on, that they're like from the 8 to 5 type of time frame. Because just know, if it's remote, the odds are they're at a coffee shop and they may take a little 30 minute this for that. And they may go to, you have to be okay with that. They're in remote. If you try to micromanage from afar, you will absolutely lose them. So I would say that's the one thing. Secondly, what you needed to do in person is what you need to do times 10 virtually. So if I'm saying recognize people, if I'm saying listen and include and buy in, if I'm saying bring them around a table with decisions, if I'm saying all the things I'm saying, all of those things, you have to do that with much more intentionality. It's no different. It's just much more of it. Maybe we can do virtual coffees. If we absolutely can't get together, if we can get together, let's try it. Maybe twice a year, let's actually see each other. But you have to be like, this is scheduled. This is planned. You have to do it. That we still have to have those connections there. So that's what I would say. More of the same, but times 10.
So it sounds like leaders have to be much more purposeful. You have to decide that I'm going to contact these people on a more regular basis. I'm going to have conversations with them. I'm going to listen to what's happening. Are there any issues or home life? Really a lot more than instead of just sort of wandering around and saying, hey, what's happening? I got to be more directive.
Yes, it's not, being a leader, someone managing people is not for the faint of heart. I qualified that because anybody can be a leader. You don't need a title. But those who have title have more authority, more power, more responsibility. And yes, there's going to be more intentionality and purposefulness behind it for sure.
Obvious challenge that came from the pandemic and working remotely is when you're not in person, it can be hard to pick up on body language and cues that are communicating what someone has kind of left unsaid. How can virtual leaders recognize this issue and approach it with their employees?
I think the biggest thing, so recognizing unsaid really is the idea of seeing things that are underneath the surface that aren't being spoken. And I think the first thing is that we have to understand why things are left unsaid. And that's usually going back to the lack of trust, where truth-telling is not encouraged inside the environment. So we have to understand first why things are left unsaid. And then we have to say, now that I'm, for example, you and I on the screen, I need to be real intentional about asking the right questions. So I can see you from your shoulders up, but I don't really think I need to be looking, seeing your leg or your foot, if your foot's beating or something. I don't really need to see that right now. What I see right now is all I need to see. I think now we've gotten better about controlling our background, but before we weren't. And so there'd be like a cat or climbing over the keys of our computer. And then like our elderly person who was at home, we would try to put that Teams blur out in, but they would like put their arm through the blur out and we'd see some person there, or our child would walk by, whatever. It would be so many things we'd see in the background. And I would always tell people then to pay attention to what we saw in the background. So when we do active listening is not just my ears, it's my eyes, it's my heart, it's my gut. And so I'm actually listening to you with my heart. I'm watching how you're saying the thing you're saying to see how passionate you are about it, to see if it makes you sad, if it makes you uncomfortable. And then I'm picking up on that cue and I'm making sure that, okay, oh gosh, that, wow, you said that about your mother. I didn't know. Like, let's talk a little bit more about that. Like, what's happening there? And I'm going to keep going further. I'm going to go further. I'm going to keep watching your eyes and I'm going to keep seeing if you are wiggling, just what I can see. So that, again, that level of purposeful attentiveness, not the distractions are not in the way. I could care less if this thing is buzzing and this thing is binging and the Slack messages are up. What's going on with you? I'm here for you. I want to be here for you. So when I'm doing that though, I'm looking at all the things. So the recognizing unsaid in this context between leader and team member, between you and I, is me just looking at, like, you smiled at me, you grinned. Something about what I said was interesting. I might stop right in that moment if we weren't on a podcast and go, what was funny about that? Or what was interesting about what I just said? And then we would have deeper conversation where I may not have done that before. I'm going to be doing that more in the virtual space. So that's what I would say.
That's great. So if you had to tell me what the future of leadership is going to be about in one word, what would you say that is?
I'd say trust. I think that at like the bedrock of all the things, whatever we're looking for, the bottom line to go up, or we're looking for, you know, better increased margins, we're looking for increased satisfaction, whatever those end outcomes are, people will do more for us if they trust us. They trust our word, they trust our behaviors, they trust what we promise, they trust our presence, they trust our availability. So I feel like that is at the foundation.
Heather, it's been great meeting you and speaking with you today and really learning from some of your experiences. I'm sure our listeners are going to gain a lot from this today. So thanks so much for being part of our podcast.
Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate you, Steve.
It was an absolute pleasure speaking with Heather. I love that she chose trust to define the future of work, as it really is the foundation of any relationship, both work and personal. Active listening is really so important, but so is taking action. Heather gave a lot of advice on how to use curiosity to better understand and connect with your staff, but you need to be using that information in an effective way. If people are feeling disconnected, invest some time in creating more social events for your team. If you're noticing there's a silo, talk with department heads and come up with a new way of communicating that works for everyone. Leaving this podcast, I encourage you to find small things that you can do in your own office that makes your team more comfortable. If you're interested in learning more about Heather, we've linked to her website and books in the show notes, along with the Pearman Personality Indicator that I mentioned in the interview. And make sure to subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you soon for another episode of Work Therapy.